Matthew 5, 9 through 12. One day, as he saw the crowds gathering, Jesus went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples gathered around him, and he began to teach them. The Beatitudes. God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way.
Thank you, Bridget. So we have been digging into the Beatitudes and why we should consider ourselves blessed when we are poor in spirit or mourning, when we're called to be meek, to hunger and thirst for righteousness, be merciful, be pure in heart, and to be peacemakers. Last week, Pastor Kristen spoke about anger and how we don't have the right to be angry. And when we are angry, which we get, we're not allowed to use that anger to justify our actions. She showed us in God's word how anger tears down and destroys not only those who spew it, but everything around it. We are called to be ambassadors of Christ to all, not just those we have a personal relationship with. Walking with God was never promised to be an easy road. Sometimes, walking as disciples of Christ, we need to take a stand for what is right, even if the rest of the world disagrees. So I want to preface tonight's message by letting you know that back in, February, March, maybe even January, Pastor Kristen and I discussed what do we want to do for the next series. We were on You Matter. That was a great campaign. We were rolling with it. Everything was going along great. But we knew that we were going to end it soon. So we said, where are we going next? Well, God spoke to both of us at different times, in different ways, and led us to the Sermon on the Mount or the Beatitudes. Well, after a lot of discussion back and forth and prayer about it, we decided the Sermon on the Mount, which covers the Beatitudes. So, it never ceases to amaze me, though, that God knew what state our country would be in and that we would need to address so many issues. His timing is always perfect. So this week, we're delving into the final part of the Beatitudes on how we are to live in spite of the world's views. In light of everything going on in our country lately, we as a church need to take a stand. We may even be persecuted for it. But as a church, we must not sit idly by while our brothers and sisters are in so much turmoil, so much pain, so much fear, and so much persecution. The state of hatred in our country is running so rampant that we must address the underlying issue. Racism. I know, you're all thinking, racism. Hot topic, but it's also biblical, what we're going to share tonight. Racism is not allowed. Racism is not biblical in any way, shape, or form. And yes, I know there are two sides to every story. One says this, one says that. Somewhere in the middle is the truth. That being said, I realize that what the media shows us is generally based on either the left or the right-wing perspectives. Their agenda is how they twist, report, and add to the political biases. You want Trump in, you're on this side. You want Trump out, you're on this side. You want Obama in, you're on this side. You want Obama out, you're on this side. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Media is gonna twist it any way they want. They just give you what they want you to know. 90% of it's not accurate. What we can say with certainty is that racism, gender bias, homophobia, and other forms of divisive thinking exist today. It is our responsibility and our privilege as Christians to put an end to it. We cannot do that on our own. We must seek God's word, God's direction, God's guidance to achieve His will for our world. I don't have the ability to change it. You don't have the ability to change it individually. But we can change one person. And collectively, we can make a difference to more than one person. You know, a monumental moment in history of the U.S. was December 6th, 1865. Some of you might know that date. None of us were around for it, but some of you might have known that date from history. That's when the 13th Amendment was ratified to allow 4,000 black Americans to be free. It was then that slavery and skin color were supposed to join in unity rather than the great color divide. Color divide had been happening for a long time. In other words, the black and white, black versus white issue. It may have been signed into effect on 1865, but we still struggle with the inequality to this day. It's 150 plus years later. We still struggle with it. Did you know that separate colored and white water fountains still existed up until 1964? For some of us, we might remember that. I remember those days. I was only 7 or thereabouts. But we had colored here and white here. Do you know what the difference was? Colored was just a sink with a spigot. White had chillers. White privilege. We had chilled water. Colored water fountains basically was like going to the backyard and drinking out of a hose. Now I know some of you might have tuned me out, but I urge you to listen just a little longer and hear what God has to say about hating someone because of our differences, including the color of our skin. Now most of us are thinking, but I'm not a racist. Heck, some of my best friends are black. Beloved, when our brothers and sisters of color are feeling ignored, unappreciated, and treated like they're second-class citizens, then we need to take stock and embrace how they are feeling. Whether it's how you project it or not, that's how they are feeling. We cannot ignore their feelings. We need to hold ourselves accountable for whitewashing the privilege that we have had and whitewashing the racism that still exists in our country. James 2, 8 through 13 says, "Yes, indeed, it is good when you obey the royal law as found in the scriptures. Love your neighbor as yourself. But if you favor some people over others, you are committing a sin. You are guilty of breaking the law. For the person who keeps all of the laws except one is as guilty as a person who has broken all of God's laws. For the same God who said, 'You must not commit adultery,' also said, 'You must not murder.' So if you murder someone but do not commit adultery, you've still broken the law. So whatever you say or whatever you do, remember, you will be judged by the law that sets you free. There will be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others. But if you have been merciful, God will be merciful when he judges you." Wow. That's pretty powerful. So if you offend me and I don't show you any mercy, when I see God, he's going to say, no mercy. Kind of makes you think. Needs to make us think. Did you know that in 1970, the statistics for pay were disparagingly different? If a white man earned $100, the black man earned only $69. For the same job, white women earned 58, $0.7, while black women earned $48.2. Huge difference. By 1980, the gap was still staggering. White men earning $100, while their black brothers earned $70.7. So it went up a whole dollar in 10 years. White women earned $58.9, went up 20 cents in 10 years. Black women earned $55.7. So theirs went up, but still not comparable to the white male. 10 years, and the difference was barely noticeable. By 1990, the gap was still huge, but it was closing slowly. $100 for the white man, while our black brothers were paid 73.1 cents for the same 100. Same job, same credentials. The only difference was the color of their skin. White women earned 69.4, while black women earned 62.5. By 2000, the gap was still critical. White men earned $100, black men earned 78.2, white women earned 72.2, and black women earned 64.6. Theirs went down. That's heartbreaking. By 2010, white men were earning $100, black men earned 75.1. White women earned 78, black women earned 69.9. Did you notice that the black man's wages dropped by $3 per $100? By 2013, when a white man would earn $100, a black man would earn 75.1. White women were holding still holding on strong at 78, and black women fell backward to 64. It's not acceptable. It's tolerated, but it shouldn't be tolerated. What does that say about our society? Same job, different races, different genders, and the pay scales are extremely different. How can we stand by and do nothing to make change happen? It must break our hearts the way it must break God's. 1 Samuel 16:7 says, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at the way he looks on the outside or how tall he is, because I have not chosen him. For the Lord does not look at things man looks at. A man looks at the outside of a person, but the Lord looks at their heart.'" We all bleed red. All our hearts look the same. Doesn't matter what color our skin is. You can't tell me that there's no racism still. We justify our actions by saying, "Yeah, I know, but they don't pay as much rent. They don't have the same expenses." Well, of course not. They can't afford to live in the white middle class neighborhoods. They can't afford to send their kids to private piano lessons or ballet lessons or whatever. We've made sure they can't afford to live in our white neighborhoods. You know, I've heard people say, "Just let them live with their own kind." What kind is that? Is that the human kind? Those words are biting words. And that's exactly why those words have become fighting words for so many of us. Does your heart break for the gender and racial biases? I know mine does. Romans 12, 9 through 10 says, "Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other." Are we doing that? I don't know. Statistically speaking, I don't think we're doing it well. How can we as followers of Christ stand by and say nothing? You know, in the past few years, we've sat back, we've watched, we've shaken our heads, we've rolled our eyes, maybe even screamed at the television and declared, "But that isn't right." But what have we personally done to stop the injustices? Tamir Rice was 12 years old when he was shot and killed. Trayvon Martin, 17. Ahmaud Arbery, 25. I have kids older than him. George Foley was just 26. Breonna Taylor was 27. Tatiana Jefferson was 28. Sandra Bland was 28. Tony McDade was 39. They could have all been my children. Those are just a few of the wrongful deaths of our brothers and sisters of color because of the color of their skin. Each name mentioned above has had an impact on a mother, a father, maybe a brother or a sister, an aunt, an uncle, grandparents, even children. But it's also impacted our neighborhoods, our communities, and should cause every one of us to ache for the lost lives. George Foley's murder prompted people to say, no more. We're done. We cannot let this continue. As followers of Christ, beloved, we need to stand arm in arm with our brothers and sisters of color and say, it's about time. No longer will we stand by and allow our white privilege to cause others to fear for their safety and their peaceful enjoyment to live life fully. Because you know, when hatred is allowed to run rampant, everyone loses. I know we've all heard the media side of things. Maybe you've even watched the news showing the rioting, the destruction, and other distasteful things. Things that make that little voice inside of us say, well, if they'd stop the rioting, if they'd stop the burning of the buildings, the violence and the looting, then maybe I'd stand alongside of them. But what we see in the news is not necessarily what truth is going on. It's slanted to show what the media does, stir things up. Remember, there's one side and one side, and somewhere in the middle is the truth. Remember what we just learned from the Beatitudes, Matthew 5, 6 through 9. God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. And God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. Are we being called the children of God? I know we are, but racism starts with each of us, and it must end through each of us. Martin Luther King said it so perfectly. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. As I sat here writing the message, my heart was breaking. I have a large number of men and women friends of color. Their hearts are breaking. For many of the same reasons, but also for reasons I can never comprehend. One of my girlfriends of color, and I promised not to use her name because she doesn't want any attention drawn to her for fear of retaliation. So I'm going to call her Sue. Sue has three children, one teenage son and two daughters. She's told me, you know, Deb, the first thing I taught my children, both male and female, is if you're stopped by police, put your hand on the steering wheel and say yes to the officer, even if you were stopped for no reason. Always, always carry your license with you. Ask for permission to get your ID out or your driver's license. And if they say no or don't answer, tell them where it is and give them authority to go get it. If you're walking down the street with your friends, walk in groups of two or three. Never, ever walk in groups of more than four. Because if your group is greater than 12, divide up into groups of four or less. Because you don't want to be seen as a threat. You don't want to be seen as a gang. Oh, and if you're on a date, protect the woman at all costs, because young black women are prime targets for rape and murder. Always make sure you're well-dressed and comb your hair. Keep it neat. Do not play your music too loudly, because that'll get you pulled over. Don't gather on a street corner near a store. They might feel threatened that you're going to rob them, so they're going to call the police. Always get a receipt for anything you purchase. And if you're being stopped, arrested, detained for anything, even if you are not guilty, cooperate. Do not resist. Do not argue. And her last one was, be safe. Come home by sundown, unless you're at a friend's house, and then call to let me know where you are. And if I call you, please answer the phone. I need to know you're safe. She had a bunch more, but we just hit some of them. As she was telling me them, I sat there and just bawling my eyes out. It hurt my heart because I've never had to teach my children that. I've had to teach my kids karate because they were cute little petite blonde things. And I was afraid they could get snatched, so we taught them karate. But I wasn't afraid that they weren't going to come home alive, that I was going to have to view them in a morgue from a body bag. Sue also told me, she told her son, never keep more than $20 in your wallet. And if you do, go to the bank, get a receipt for every penny so you can account for it. After she and I cried, I boo-hooed cried over this list. She said, it's so much longer though, Deb. But these were the highlights. These were the ones that would ensure that my son would come home. She taught her daughters different ones. But she said, since COVID-19 quarantine, she's adjusted her list. Now her list consists of behaviors while wearing masks. Not something most of us think about. You're all wearing a mask today. Do you worry about going into the store with a mask on? Sue is health-wise, has some major health issues. She has lupus and fibro and scoliosis and a myriad of health diseases. She doesn't go to the bank herself. Her son and her daughters tend to her garden and the chickens. But she sends her son into the bank. He's 17. He's capable. They all know him. So he usually goes in with a satchel full of goodies, vegetables and eggs and whatever she had in her garden. And she brings it into the bank manager and he shares it with all the employees. She can't do that right now because she's afraid to send her 17-year-old son, her 17-year-old black son, into a bank with a satchel and a mask. She said, I'm not afraid of the guards hurting him. Not at all am I afraid of the guards hurting him because they know him. She said, I'm afraid that some vigilante is going to see this young man with a mask and a bag, and he's going to shoot first and ask questions later. So maybe my son won't come home. So instead, she has him drop her off at the bank and go park down the street. And she hobbles into the bank and takes care of her banking herself. But when her son is down the street, she said, okay, stop the car, turn it off, stand outside your car and put your hands on the side of the car because I want to make sure nobody thinks that you're here to rob anything. That's terrifying. We don't have to live that way. He has to live that way. She has to live that way. It's not right. I heard the tremble, the fear, the exhaustion, and the heartache in her voice when she told me stories of injustices that she has never shared with anyone. My heart hurt. I just cried out to God. I said, God, please protect them. Because I never understood what she lived with. I never understood what she really had to deal with. And we've talked for several years, like 13 years. I've literally watched her kids grow up. She sends me pictures, and we talk all the time. I just can't sit by any longer and ignore the pain that my brothers and sisters are living in. "Sue, what can I do for you?" she said. "I know what you can do for me. Just come alongside me. Tell me that I matter. Hold my arms up. Pray with me. Let people know that you are my friend, you are my ally, and that you've got my back." I said, "That's easy. You got that, baby. My voice matters to Sue. Might not matter to anybody else, but it sure matters to her." And so I asked her, honestly, "So when we see signs that are being held up that say Black Lives Matter, what does that mean to you?" She said, "It doesn't mean that your life doesn't matter. It just means I need you to focus on my life matters right now, because I'm scared to walk out of my house. I'm scared to send my son to the bank. Black lives matter." She said, "Blue lives matter, white lives matter, but black lives matter right now." And that's what the sign means to her. So it's time for us, as followers of Christ, to step up, reach arm in arm, side by side, and acknowledge that there is a crisis going on in America, and that black lives do matter. We need to understand that the slogan is not being divisive, but it's showing us the urgency that our black brothers and sisters need our help to fight the war, because it's a war against them. And they can't do it without us. They just want our help. Matthew 18, 12 through 14 says, "If a man has 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others on the hill and go out to search for the one that is lost? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he will rejoice over it more than over the 99 that didn't wander away. In the same way, it is not my heavenly Father's will that even one of these little ones should perish." So let me ask you a question. When the neighborhood children are playing outside your house, one falls down hard, smashes their face, maybe chips a tooth, or hurts their eye, or something, do you run to the ones that are standing on the sideline crying, going, "Help him, help him"? Or do you run to the one that's hurt? You run to the one that's hurt. You don't have to go check on the one standing over here, because the health and safety of the one that is hurting is your first priority. That's what Black Lives Matter means. It's not that all lives don't matter. Please, please understand that. It is that right now they are hurting, and we need to stand alongside of them and say, "You matter. Your life matters." Racism hasn't ended. We can't pretend that it has. Romans 12, 16 through 18. Good News Translation says, "Have the same concern for everyone. Do not be proud, but accept humble duties. Do not think of yourselves as wise. If someone has done you wrong, do not repay him with the wrong. Try to do what everyone considers to be good. Do everything possible on your part to live in peace with everybody." You know, I have the Next Door Neighbor app on my phone. Sometimes I wish I didn't. A few months after COVID quarantined everything and restrictions were set in place, one of our neighbors, he's a sweetheart, he's got a wife and some kids and just a really nice guy, was working on his car in his yard. Something he's only been able to do like once a month on a Saturday, because he works and he's got kids and he's got a family and he has a life. I've spoken with him several times. Well, on our neighborhood app, one of our dear, sweet neighbors said, "And this is why I don't want them in our community." Now, we all knew what she meant. "Yeah, they're driving my property values down." We all knew exactly who she was talking about. Not one person agreed with her. In fact, 90% of the responses were calling her out for having a racist attitude. We live in a really mixed neighborhood. I love our neighborhood. We have Hispanic neighbors, white officers, black men, white women, white men, blacks, Muslims, East Indians, Jamaicans, Cubans. I could go on. And we live in a melting pot in our neighborhood. I love our neighborhood. I wasn't real fond of the lady that wrote that. For the most part, our neighborhood rocks big time. Do you know when we had a hurricane, everybody lost power, we all got together, we cooked up food and distributed it to everybody. Because we live in a community, in a neighborhood, in a family of neighborhood people. We just love each other. We live in harmony and unity. Someday she's probably going to sell her house. That's okay with us. We're good with it. But every now and then, the voice of hatred rears its ugly head. And as fellow brothers and sisters, we need to stand firm against it. Galatians 3:28 says, "There is no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male or female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." That's how we need to live. Tom and I have a beautiful niece who's married to our nephew. They have three precious daughters and one very, very rambunctious son. He's one. They're a mixed racial family. I pray that one day our great nieces and our great nephew only hear about racial injustices in history books, and they don't have to experience it firsthand. I don't know that that will happen, but I pray that it does. Racism is ugly. It divides. It ostracizes. Belittles people. It's time to end prejudice and racism. Racism uses offensive and demeaning terms to describe someone's outer appearance. Such ugly commentary on someone should never cross our lips. We don't allow it when it comes to pink hair or the size of somebody. It's not as accepted. But when we talk about other things, we judge people by what we see. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear him." Notice it says, let everything you say be good. Not just the things that you want. Not the things that don't impact you directly. It says, everything you say be good. It's biblical to put an end to racism. It's biblical to stand with my fellow brothers and sisters and stand up for equality. It is biblical to love my brothers and sisters without regard to their skin color. Racism is evil. Sin is evil. Racism is sin. Romans 12:21 says, "Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good." Racism is evil. Whether we see our voices as necessary, life-changing, or not much of help, others do. Sue said, "I just need you to be with me, pray with me, love me." She said, "I know your heart, Deb." She said, "I just need your heart. Your voice will follow." We must be a voice for the right, for God's kingdom. It's not about us. It's about his kingdom. Because we cannot have a positive impact on God's kingdom if we're being negative. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Romans 14, 12 through 13 says, so then each of us will give an account of ourselves to God. Therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, make up your mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or sister. Be the hand up. Be the hand to hold their hand up when they're so tired. Let's stand united with our brothers and sisters of color. Let them know that we care and that Black lives do matter. They don't just matter to us. They matter to God. Let us help them find the joy back in their life. Let's show others what it means to love like Jesus. Because Jesus does not look at the skin. He only looks at the heart. And all of our hearts look the same. So let us love in ways that matter. We're going to take a few minutes. We've got a song that and a video. But we want to take time for you to pray about whatever God has put on your heart. Maybe you're asking God to search your heart. Maybe you're harboring some slightly racist ideas that you didn't even know you were holding on to. Maybe you are hesitant to stand up at some of these marches and these rallies for fear. And we understand that. But we have to start being bold for Christ. So during this time of prayer, we can't come over to you because of the CDC guidelines, but we want you to take a moment to reflect. Ask God what needs fixing in your heart so you can help fix the heart of others. Because only through him can we make that change, can we make a difference.
In a time full of war, be peace. In a time full of doubt, just believe. Yeah, there ain't that much difference between you and me. In a time full of war, be peace. In a world full of hate, be a light. When you do somebody wrong, that needs change and make a difference. In a time full of noise, just listen. Cause life is but a breeze, better live it. In a place that needs a change, make a difference. In a world full of hate, be a light. When you do somebody wrong, line is 6 feet in the ground. In a race you can't win, just slow it down. In a world full of hate, be a light. See black and white in a world.